It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 347. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks for waiting for us for the Christmas break. We took a little bit of a siesta there for about a week and a half, just so we could celebrate the holidays. And I know Justin and Liz and I were doing some traveling, and I had some early mornings with work all week, Christmas week. So we just weren't able to get together until now, but we are here, and we're going to talk some Phillies baseball here over the next hour or so. Joining me, as they do every week, is Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin, of course, you know from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, hi, how are you, buddy? How was your Christmas?
John, I'm really sorry I made you feel anything close to envy by unearthing that Phillies jacket from my childhood. Well, not childhood, my adolescent closet.
Yes.
I couldn't believe, for anyone who didn't see it, I tweeted a picture of this.
You've got to see it.
Maroon striped Phillies jacket I wore when I was a grade school, maybe like
gorgeous.
fourth grade. And I didn't know, I couldn't believe it was still there. I felt like I've been asked to go through things at my parents' house so many times. I can't believe that I didn't stumble on that before. I thought that thing was long gone. So that felt like quite the find. Mm. And in putting that online, there was tons of replies of people putting up their old throwback baseball jackets, which was
Justin, I just
awesome.
Saw it. It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous.
Oh, I love it.
I so desperately, when I was in first and second grade, I remember seeing it in, I guess, maybe it was Gimbel's department store in Philadelphia, back in the Philly. This is, you know, that's how long ago this was. There was a Phillies jacket just like that I was dying for, and I never got it. My parents were never able to get it for me. I guess maybe they couldn't figure out exactly which one I wanted, because it's not like you could go online and you could point to it and say, I want that one, you know? So it was, I saw that jacket of yours that you put on Twitter, and it took me back to first, second grade when I was just dying for a jacket like that, exactly like that.
One guy replied with a throwback varsity-looking Philadelphia Athletics jacket that he said was passed down to him from his grandfather. I mean,
oh my,
awesome!
Yeah, it's super great.
That's fantastic. Well, that's good stuff. Check that out on Justin's timeline at Justin_Clue, because it is really nice. And Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports is joining us. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, hi. How was your Christmas?
My Christmas was excellent. I got some really cool gifts. I got a Bryce Harper throwback pinstripe t-shirt, which was awesome. I found a book about Bill Giles at...
Really?
Yes, at Midtown Scholar Bookstore in Harrisburg, which is one of my favorite places on the planet. It's, I think it's compiled from new interviews at the time. I think this came out in 2011, and old interviews with him. And I'm very excited to dig into it.
Very cool. Bill Giles, I know he kind of towards the end of his tenure got a little bit of a bad rap because he had claimed the Phillies were a small market team, and for years and years they never spent on the team, but he was really influential, especially in the National League. I think he was the head of the National League for a number of years, back when you used to have separate heads of the National League and American League, and there were more distinct differences between the two leagues. So he's a fascinating figure. He really is. That would be a good book to check out. So we'll have to talk about it maybe on a Patreon or something like that at some point in the near future. So we are back, folks, for Hittin' Season. By the way, did you guys do Christmas presents with each other? Because it's kind of funny, as I get older here, Amy and I were talking about this a little bit. My wife Amy and I were talking a little bit about this, and I know you guys know who Amy is, but just in case people are listening and don't know who Amy is when I say her name, that's my wife. We now that we have like three kids and we have nieces and nephews to buy for, and we do round robin Secret Santas with the different adults in our family, like we didn't get each other anything for Christmas this year. And I ended up, I think for Christmas I got one gift this year. I got a gift certificate to Carhartt, a $75 gift certificate to Carhartt. That was my Christmas present for this year. And I think the wife and I gave each other an ottoman that we needed to replace in our living room. That just so you both are aware, when you have children, that might be part of your Christmas future.
Cool.
All your spending is going to go towards the children and your brothers and sisters' children, and you'll do round robins with, you know, you'll pick like two or three of your adult relatives that you'll do, because you just don't have enough money to spend the appropriate amount of cash on each person. So Christmas has lost a little bit of its luster outside of just it being a really nice time with family.
Wow, John, depressing.
Yeah,
that is not an even trade-off. I would say no.
It really is kind of interesting, though. You really do get more joy out of Christmas. Like it becomes a holiday all about your kids, kind of a thing. You know what I mean? You guys will get it once you guys have kids. Like your enjoyment of Christmas is all about how much your kids are enjoying Christmas, and so it doesn't really matter. My wife and I have an anniversary coming up. We'll get each other something nice for that. But anyway.
I totally know what you mean. You kind of just enter that point where you're like, well, am I trying to make this like it was when I was a kid? Or should I be leaning more towards the future and thinking about like, oh, how can I make someone else feel like how I felt when I was a kid?
Exactly. And I'm big on that. Like, I'm big on memories, like wanting to create memories. Like, I want my kids, I want them to remember certain things about their childhood. You know what I mean? So if you can do that, Christmas time's a great time for them to kind of click in with some memories, and they can remember back, oh, when I was 8, you know, mom and dad did this, or, you know, we did that, or whatever. So anyway, I hope everybody listening had a Merry Christmas, and we're going to get into some New Year's stuff here coming up on the podcast, because by the time you hear this, the calendar will more than likely have flipped to 2020. But the first thing we're going to get into here is the state of the National League East. Over the last week and a half or so, things have quieted down on the hot stove. It seems as though everybody wanted to get all their stuff done before Christmas. Josh Donaldson is still hanging on the vine out there. He's the big prize yet to be claimed, and it seems inevitable that he's going to sign with a National League East team. That seems to be the general consensus. I saw a video put out by the MLB Network. It was one of their segments on one of their many baseball talk shows, and one of the topics they were talking about was the state of the National League East and who the favorites were in the National League East. And as I watched it, I couldn't believe that Tom Verducci was talking about the Mets as the favorite to win the National League East. And it made me think, are we sleeping on the Mets a little bit? And to talk about the fact, you know, Donaldson hasn't signed with the Braves or the Nationals just yet. So where do you guys think we are in terms of the Phillies in the pecking order in the National League East? Is there any scenario in which they could be considered the favorites? Do you guys, Justin, I'll start with you first. Do you see the Phillies as being on par with the Mets? Are they ahead of the Mets, below the Mets? Where are they here in the National League East? Again, understanding that Josh Donaldson is kind of still out there and can radically change the landscape.
Yeah, early projections, a set that I saw had the win totals for NL East teams, the Nationals and Braves even in like the low 90s, and the Mets and Phillies also even in the mid 80s. And I mean, that felt about right to me. The thing about this Phillies team is that, you know, maybe it's just that we're far enough removed from actually seeing them play baseball, but I really feel like this could be a fourth place team or a first place team. I guess it's just the likelihood is just in my head, instinctively I'll land on like, this is probably closer to like a third place team in this division. It's tough to imagine them, you know, gaining at this point, having gained the ground on the Braves and Nationals that they would need to really make the right amount of noise. But as far as the Mets go, I mean, that's gotta be a choice you make to start a conversation or to, you know, just stir things up a little bit, because I don't think the Mets are necessarily a slouch, but they're also definitely not the best team in the National League East. I would say even with Donaldson, you know, maybe that puts them closer to competing with the Braves and Nationals. But, you know, I'm in awe of that pitching staff. I will forever be in awe of Jacob DeGrom, but you know, it's just not the case. I don't know. It's kind of a broad argument to make. It's just like, I don't know what to tell you. I mean,
they're
not
better than the Phillies.
Look at how they did last year. You know, like that. I would say they're closer to being on even footing with the Phillies. And if you want to make the argument they're not as good, I can totally buy that too.
Yeah, I think they're probably about even. Like looking at them, like I think there are things that the Phillies have that the Mets don't, but the Mets also have an incredible pitching staff, and the Phillies have Aaron Nola, who we remember as being great a few years ago, and Zach Wheeler, who could be great. We hope he's great. But we also, there are a lot fewer question marks over on the Mets. So I can't put the Phillies any higher than third. I mean, how could you?
Yeah, no, I don't think you can put the Phillies any higher than third. But I'm looking at the Mets depth chart and remembering I didn't realize, and it's, you know, it's funny. September wasn't that long ago, but it feels like it was a long time ago.
It was 8 years ago, John.
No, they won 86 games last year. I had forgotten that the Mets, because I think the Phillies did well against the Mets last year. They kind of turned it around and won some games against New York in the second half of the season. And I'm looking at the rotation. Is it better than, you know, is it a good rotation? Jacob deGrom is obviously awesome, but Zach Wheeler has had better numbers than Noah Syndergaard over the last 2 years. Even as up and down as Wheeler has been, Syndergaard has not been a great starter for the Mets. And the Phillies have actually knocked him around a couple of times. Marcus Stroman has also been kind of up and down. He's not a big bat misser, but Stroman's a good pitcher. But then you got Rick Porcello as your number four. And then you've got guys like Michael Wacha and Steven Matz battling out for the number five spot in the rotation. That just doesn't seem like a great starting rotation to me. And the bullpen, if Edwin Diaz, what's he going to do? You know, what kind of season is he going to have? Jeurys Familia, what kind of season is he going to have? I'm kind of, you know, I would have liked to see the Phillies go out and get Dellin Betances, but Betances is by no means a sure thing either that the you know, Mets have in the back of the bullpen. So, you know, I look at the outfield, Davis, Nimmo, and Conforto. Conforto's a really good player. I think Nimmo's got some potential there. But in the infield, you've got Jeff McNeil, Ahmad Rosario, Robinson Cano, Pete Alonso. Cano is kind of a black hole at second base. Wilson Ramos, I mean, who knows what you're going to get from him now that he's another year older. So, again, I guess I can see the argument where the Mets are a little better than the Phillies. But I hear the talk about the Mets starting rotation, and I don't know. Is it better than the Phillies rotation? Probably.
I mean, it certainly is easy. The Phillies rotation last year was such a weak point that, I don't know, maybe Jacob deGrom takes up three or four spots in people's minds. He certainly doesn't mind.
Yeah.
And I feel like the past couple of years, we've watched that young Mets staff kind of not hit the potential we all were very scared of when it had Matt Harvey in it. When Syndergaard was a more effective pitcher. I mean, that was pretty alarming. But you're right. I mean, now at this point, it's you got to look at the numbers here and see that might not be the narrative anymore. I mean, I will say that last year the Mets had 10 players with at least 2 WAR, and the Phillies only had 5, and one of them was Cesar Hernandez.
Oh God!
So,
yeah. Wow.
So like across the board, I think they got better performances out of more guys than the Phillies did. But then again, the Phillies got absolutely hammered with health issues.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and that's kind of what I mean when I feel like there's a wide range that this team could seriously contend, or it could fall into fourth place. And a lot of that has to do with the season we just saw them have. You know, they were a team that was in first place for however many days and then fell off again. So, yeah, I think this I think it would be really great to be able to answer this question in 20. You know, in the offseason of the 2020 and having had the Phillies had a full healthy season where nobody's like knees just popped for no reason. And then maybe we'd have a better idea of who they are. But right now we have that fun little caveat of, yeah, but, you know, nobody was at 100% for much of the time.
Yeah. And Liz, I think one of the overarching themes that I've been seeing on Twitter in response to whenever I post something about the Phillies is a lot of negativity about what they've done, the roster that they have so far, even though they now are over $200 million of money spent. You know, it's, I wonder if people are being too negative about the Phillies at the moment, that they're too down on the Phillies chances thus far, because no, it doesn't look like they've added enough this offseason to make up the ground necessary to catch the Braves and the Nationals. But the Nationals and Braves also right now have very big holes at third base. You know, the Nationals, I think, are, I don't know that you can get the same kind of success from Howie Kendrick and Ryan Zimmerman and some of the other guys they got success from last year and duplicate that. I mean, I can see scenarios where the Phillies are better, specifically like because of what Justin said. They're probably not going to be as injured in 2020 as they were in 2019. Do you get a sense that maybe fans are a little too down on this baseball team as we head into 2020?
I think so. I mean, I know I've been very down on them. We're all expecting a lot, and I don't think that's unfair. I don't think it's unfair of any of us to expect a lot. But I feel like when you get to a certain level of criticism, and I've certainly got there, you sort of have to back off and wait until they actually play some games. You know, it's hard to not be excessively negative looking at some of the holes they have, looking at Jake Arrieta continuing to exist, trying to convince us that this is the year that he'll bounce back. But I'm going to try really hard. I'm going to try really, really hard not to be so down on them. Because you know, the Zach Wheeler signing wasn't bad. If they weren't going to sign Gerrit Cole, which they obviously weren't, you know, then they could have done worse, and they took a chance when they thought they needed to, because they knew they weren't going to do that. So, you know, dealing with the disappointment of not getting the best guy on the market is hard. But now that he's signed and we know that he was never really going to go anywhere else, honestly, you know.
Yeah, he really wasn't. Yeah, he was going to go to the Yankees because the Yankees were going to do whatever it took to get him.
And he wanted to go there and they wanted him. And, you know, money was no object, really. Which is, you know, it's nice to say, like, those Yankees are back, and they're about to hit the highest luxury tax penalty level. They're like $2 million short of the luxury tax, where they have to pay 75% overage and lose 10 spots in the draft.
And what do they have to show for it? The best team in baseball.
I know, my God.
Oh, yes. Like, yes,
stupid.
Yeah.
Stupid.
I know, so stupid. I mean, they're trying to screw Jacoby Ellsbury over so they can back off a little bit and maybe add a little bit more. But, you know.
I would say the Phillies are not a complete team. And if we're talking about fan perspective, I think it's very easy not to trust this team.
Yeah.
And that goes beyond even like right now, where it's like, well, we're improving, but in smarter ways than you realize. And I mean, when they're actually playing games where it's tough to trust this team's, it will be tough to trust this team's success. You know, in the first half, if we see that, because
we've been burned so many times.
Coming off two straight seasons where it's been very easy to be disappointed in this team.
Yeah.
And we've seen them shut down. We've seen, you know, a lot of really embarrassing losses, which, you know, sidebar, we talked about a lot about embarrassing losses from the last decade on the Dirty Inning.
And, so excited.
You know, there's a pretty lengthy segment near the end where we're talking about the two worst losses, one from 2018 and one from 2019, which both happen to be from the Gabe Kapler era. And that the man was not afraid to take an embarrassing loss. I think that an L was an L to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he would come out after the game and explain the strategy and all the thinking behind why they lost the way they did and why he did what he did during the game. There was always a reason, and you know, I won't get it, that was annoying in its own way, but there were some really demoralizing losses from that era, and it was just 2 years, but the difference was you could tell there was an uptick in expectations starting around 2017, when the coverage around this team around the end of the year, when the young players we were so excited about had come up, and Rhys Hoskins was going on his historic home run tear, and the losses stopped being about the fact that the Phillies had lost, because that was just, yeah, that was going to happen, but it started being about what these players could do. And then the 2 years following that, when it was like, okay, look, we're going to start getting these free agents, even getting Jake Arrieta at the time was like, all right, great, this team had the money, he was just sitting there, and they needed starting pitching, and they got this guy. So I think expectations got really high, and they should be, you know, and this team moving forward, this team signs Bryce Harper and expectations go through the roof. But from the fans' perspective, you know, this is going to be tough, because now, yeah, they're not a complete team yet, but there's some real talent on this team. There's playoff talent on this team.
Yeah.
And what are we supposed to do? Like, we're supposed to just trust that first half success means this team won't fade down the stretch. Well, you're going to have to show that to us before fans really get on board, I think.
Yeah, they're asking us to trust that Jake Arrieta will be better. They're asking us to trust that one
I won't
of...
trust that. I trust what you're going to say next more. I trust that one of those guys,
Pivetta Velasquez,
one of them is going to be an okay pitcher more than I trust Jake Arrieta coming back to any sort of effective pitcher.
Right, and that's what they're asking us to do is to trust. Otherwise, they would have signed Hyunjin Ryu, or they would have signed Dallas Keuchel, or they would have signed somebody else to really solidify the middle of the rotation. And you know, they're asking us to trust that they'll be able to develop Alec Bohm into a good third baseman. Otherwise, they would sign Josh Donaldson. You know, I mean, they would do things in order to make it. They're asking us to trust that they can cobble together a bullpen with a lot of the same names and arms that were here last year. They're not going out and signing anybody else right now. So I get it too. And you know, it's tough to blast a team that's going to be over $200 million in payroll for not doing enough. But at the same time, there is a gap between the Phillies and the better teams in their division, all of whom are making improvements. The Marlins have gotten better this offseason. There wasn't much place to go other than up. But they're not. I mean, they've added some nice pieces. They added Corey Dickerson this week, who's a nice player. I mean, they've added a couple other nice pieces. They're not going to be as easy a pushover as they were last year. And even last year, the Phillies had trouble with Miami anyway. So
I think you wouldn't blame the Phillies for not doing enough. I think you would blame them for not doing enough well.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
That's a very good way of putting it. Yeah. And I think that's the thing. It's like, how much are they going to spend? I mean, if you want this team to develop some young talent, you got to let the young talent play at some point, which is why they're not going and signing Josh Donaldson and why you want to give Alec Bohm a shot at third base at some point this year. So,
which is interesting because this team hasn't hesitated to add veteran pieces mid-season the past 2 years either.
Right.
And now we're looking at a situation where they could markedly improve one of their bigger vacancies, and now they've decided, well, no, now we're gonna let the youth kind of play out the way it's supposed to. So, look, if they're changing the way they do things, then that's healthy. That's healthy because some of this stuff hasn't worked out. Some of it's someone's fault and some of it isn't. But, yeah, I mean, it's just interesting. It'll be interesting to see the adjustments made, if there are any, moving forward.
Real quick before we get to our first break, what do you guys think about what they're doing with the bullpen? Because obviously Betances went and signed with New York. There's a couple names out there. There's, you know, Daniel Hudson's still out there. There's a few other relief pitching names that are still out there. But signing a couple of those guys would, again, put them over the luxury tax, which, again, if you're going to go over the tax, you don't go over the tax by $2 million by signing a couple of relievers. You go over the tax, you know, to sign somebody who's going to be impactful. I wonder, you know, do you think, Liz, that they just feel burned from past off seasons where they spent big money on David Robertson and Pat Neshek and Juan Nicasio and Tommy Hunter and just decided we're not going down that road again?
Can you blame them?
I can't.
No.
And you saw what the Nationals did last year, too, how awful their bullpen was in the first couple months of the season. The bullpen is one of the few things that you really can address during the season and fix it. We've seen teams do that year after year. Teams that struggle with a bullpen get those pieces are easier to acquire in season.
Yeah, I if they don't sign any big bullpen names, I'm gonna have no criticisms about anything they do with the bullpen because it's been just a disaster no matter what they've done. And so whether they do anything or nothing, it's gonna go how it's gonna go. Sometimes you get lucky and sometimes you don't. I think there are. You can count, you only need two hands to count the number of really, truly reliable relievers in baseball. You only need two hands, and there are 30 teams. And so if your bullpen hits and it's good and it can hold it together, then that is amazing. And if it doesn't, then you're just like almost every other team in baseball.
No, that's fair, and Phillies are going to have, they're already paying David Robertson a ton of money this year.
He's
to
never
not
pitching.
Pitch a single inning.
He's not going to pitch for the Phillies ever. Like, they do not give any more big money. Obviously, there's a curse. This is like the Spinal Tap drummer's curse. It's Phillies relievers, and they don't explode. They just suck really bad.
Tommy Hunter and Pat Neshek are still out there.
Jeez, I wonder who will take a flyer on them.
I bet you if they're still hanging around in spring training, don't be surprised to see a minor league invitation to Tommy Hunter. I'm just saying.
Not from the Phillies.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt. I wouldn't put it past the Phillies.
What are you saying?
I wouldn't put it past them.
Why are
I'm
you
just saying?
Why are you putting that out in the world?
I like to hurt people.
Obviously.
That's where it comes from. All right, up next, let's talk about an interesting piece that was out in, I think it was NBC Sports. No, it was in The Athletic, a Matt Gelb piece about retiring Phillies numbers. It got the online community talking quite a bit. So we'll get into that up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So in a piece that Matt Gelb wrote for The Athletic this week, guys, he talked about, and he talked to some people within the organization about their policy regarding retiring numbers. And this is coming up because there's a lot of speculation as to whether or not the Phillies are going to retire Roy Halladay's number and whether or not they should retire some of the numbers from the great players of the 07 to 11 crew. Of course, we're talking mostly about Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, and Ryan Howard. And Justin, their policy is that they only retire the numbers of players who are in the Hall of Fame, and that's Mike Schmidt, Jim Bunning, Steve Carlton. Who else am I forgetting? Richie Ashburn. Who else is
Chuck
they
Klein?
Retire? Chuck Klein, thank you. Yeah, I think that's all of them, right? The five of them. They didn't retire Grover Cleveland Alexander's number because I don't think he had a number. So, anyway, those are. I mean, obviously, the pillars of this organization, and this organization has not had enough great players during its heyday where you could say, "Wow, they really missed the boat not retiring that guy's number." So. But now you've got a collection of guys from their most sustained run of excellence, their best run of excellence, that 07 to 11 crew, where you could really make the argument that they should retire some of the numbers, all of the numbers, maybe, or I guess you could make the argument that none of them should be retired. Justin, where do you stand on the Phillies' retirement of numbers? I don't want to come right out and ask you which numbers they should retire. Did you read the piece, and what are your thoughts on how the Phillies approach this?
I did not read the piece. I feel like this is a good topic, I think, for discussion. It's come up before, and I think I was like obnoxiously big about it, if you can imagine that. But
no, that's not you.
My general realistic stance on this is like, obviously they're not going to go out of their way to retire numbers for guys like Shane Victorino or Jason Worth. These guys were fan favorites and huge, huge impactful players during that period. But you know, in general, the idea that they're only going to retire guys who get into the Hall of Fame is, that's just silly. Like, who is this for? This is for fans. This goes
right
on the fence where fans see it, and fans get to come to these ceremonies and come to games because numbers are being retired. The Phillies haven't done this in so long. I mean, Schmidt's got to be the most recent one, right?
I think Ashburn got retired.
Oh, right.
Ashburn went into
after
the Hall of Fame after,
yeah,
Schmidt. Yeah,
got it. Yeah. So, I mean, even that was you know, decades ago at this point. And as you said, this team doesn't have a whole lot of legendary players. I think that there were legends created during this period we're talking about that give you the validation to retire the numbers of Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, and Ryan Howard. I think you got to recognize that this was the most successful era in team history. Like, it doesn't feel like it was that long, but the most sustained success that included the highest number of franchise wins in team history. I think you could argue that 2011 team was the best team in franchise history. So I don't see how you let that go unacknowledged in this particular novelty, because that's what it is. It's a novelty for fans, and fans don't care if these guys are in the Hall of Fame. I mean, they care because they want them to be in the Hall of Fame, but that's the reason you retire their numbers, because you're in control of that. They've put all these guys on the Wall of Fame, and like, that's great, and everybody comes out for that. But I feel like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but getting your number retired is a tier above getting a plaque on the Wall of Fame. I mean, nobody's ever
for sure
wear that number again. Like, that's deeply historic for the franchise. And that's what Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, and Ryan Howard were. They're deeply historic for this franchise. All three of them, like, grown through the organization, developed in their farm system. All three of them all-stars, two of them MVPs, all of them World Series champions. I mean, how do you just let that go because of an arbitrary rule that they have to be in Cooperstown first? So I wouldn't feel like it was overkill to do all three of them the way they did last year, putting them on the Wall of Fame. Like, I think that's absolutely appropriate. So, yeah, that's kind of my stance on it.
Liz, where are you on this?
I mean, I read the piece, and I agree completely with Justin. There's a part of it at the end where, gosh, who was it? I have the line written down, but I don't know who said it. It's, what do the Phillies stand for? I think it's right at the end of the piece. It's, right now, this is what we stand for. In 5 years, do we switch it? I don't know. And that's, like, what... It's easy to see what the Phillies stand for, because at the moment they stand for these unattainable standards that someone else is setting. Like the Phillies, it seems like the Phillies never really set any standards for themselves as far as mm-hmm. what they want to do to honor their own players. They just said, well, the Hall of Fame exists. Obviously, this is what it is. And they just stopped paying attention to it. And they just it's like they've continued with the idea that this is some kind of like actual philosophy on how to honor their own players. It's not. It's really not. Every team does things differently, and that the Phillies have limited it to this, it's really strange, because they're ignoring the will of their fans and the importance of these players. Like, why shouldn't they create their own standards? The Phillies are one of the oldest and most storied, you know, maybe not for the best reasons, but storied franchises in all of baseball. You know, they should have a Yankees-like attitude towards their own players. Like, they haven't had a ton of great ones, but they should be proclaiming their importance to everyone all the time. How important they are to the fans. Like, what did these players truly mean to the organization? Why shouldn't, like Justin said, why shouldn't arbitrary outside election decide what the Phillies should do to honor these players who have so much meaning to, like, fans, players, and even staff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is all for the fans. There's no way around
it.
It should be.
The way they're doing it, it doesn't seem like it's for the fans. It's like they feel like they have to meet the highest of baseball standards because they want to avoid not being taken seriously. Like, guys, you've got like 10,000 plus losses, the most of any professional sports team ever. Let's give it up.
We do a podcast about how stupid some of their losses have been. You don't have to worry about occasionally not being taken seriously.
Right.
Exactly. And like deciding to retire Chase Utley's jersey even though he wasn't in the Hall of Fame, no one would think that was inappropriate. No one.
You know what made me not take the Phillies seriously? It wouldn't be if they retired Chase Utley, the greatest, you know, second baseman to ever play for the Phillies number. It would be, I don't know, losing 24-4 to the Mets on a day where Ranger Suarez was allowed to hit with a 6-run. Like that, you know, that stuff feels so much more embarrassing than retiring a legendary player's number.
Letting Kapler work for the organization for 2 years. I feel that's more embarrassing.
Here's where the logic doesn't make any sense. It's you're allowing the Baseball Writers Association of America to determine what numbers you retire.
What have they ever given a crap about the Phillies?
It's your decision. You know, as an organization, this is your decision. Don't leave it up to the Baseball Writers Association of America, many of whom have probably never watched Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, or Ryan Howard play for any extended period of time. It shouldn't be their decision, but if you're deciding that they have to be in the Hall of Fame before their numbers are retired, you're basically saying, we're going to cede this responsibility to the Baseball Writers Association of America.
Exactly.
Not only that, let's just say Roy Halladay gets into the Hall of Fame, but none of the other three guys, which is probably the most likely scenario. Howard's not getting into the Hall of Fame.
No.
Rollins almost certainly isn't getting into the Hall of Fame. Utley is borderline. I can see a scenario where he gets in, but maybe the Veterans Committee. But so Halladay would be the only one of those guys to get his number retired. He was good for 2 years in Philadelphia. He wasn't a part of the World Series championship team. He wasn't even a part of the 2009 team that went to the World Series. And here's an even more interesting one. Suppose Cole Hamels has another couple of seasons like he had last year, and he builds up enough of these counting statistics, which I think is highly possible, over the next couple of years. If he pitches effectively towards the end of these one-year deals he's going to sign, he could very well be the only member of that 07 to... you know, that 07, 08, 09 team. Let's say the teams that went to the World Series to get into the Hall of Fame. You're going to tell me Cole Hamels is the only one of those players that's eligible to have their numbers retired because he's the only one who had a career long enough after he left the Phillies to earn admittance into the Baseball Hall of Fame. That's what doesn't make sense to me on this with this whole thing. You've got in Chase Utley the best second baseman in franchise history and a borderline Hall of Famer. You've gotten Jimmy Rollins the best shortstop in team history, who also holds the team's all-time hits record. No one has more hits than Jimmy Rollins does. And you have in Ryan Howard, a guy who had one of the most prolific power surges of any player in Major League Baseball, holds the single-season home run record, a record which probably is never going to be broken by anybody else. And all three of those guys played basically their whole careers in Philadelphia. Chase Utley had a swan song with the Dodgers, and I know there are some Dodgers fans that claim him as their own, but let's not be silly here. He's a Philadelphia Philly. If he goes into the Hall of Fame, he's going in as a Philly. So you've got these three guys who were distinctly Phillies. You know, Roy Halladay was a Philly for a little while, but he's not distinctly Philly. He's as much, if not more, Blue Jay than Philly. Cole Hamels at this point is more other teams than Philly at this point. You know what I mean? So the Phillies just have to do what they think is the right thing to do themselves. Well, that's not a good idea. Phillies, I take that back. Let us decide for you, okay? This podcast will decide for you. Retire Utley's number, retire Rollins' number, retire Howard's number. And you know what? I would be okay if they retired Halliday's and Hamels' number if they're going to retire those other three guys' numbers. But of all, if I'm ranking them, Utley, Rollins, Howard are the three I would do, no-brainer. Hamels is pretty close to that. Halliday would be a distant five. But right now it feels to me like Halliday is the most likely of the five to get his number retired by the Phillies, and I think that's crazy.
I really hope they don't.
I don't think it makes I don't think there's how much could anyone in the organization really care about this quote unquote rule, you know, like how many
shouldn't.
Of them
yeah, it's
how
crazy.
Many of them could really feel so hard and fast about needing these guys to get into the Hall of Fame first before they make a bunch of money having we're retiring the jersey of Chase Utley ceremony at a game. Like if they had done that, well, I guess they couldn't have because he hadn't retired yet. But like, you know, that's kind of a gimme. Like people will come out for that. And this is a team that has not been a super draw for the past couple of years. So I just don't see how this is any sort of obstacle for them. It just seems so needless.
It's so silly. You know,
We shouldn't have to get worked up about this.
Here's the other thing. The Phillies are not going to assign any new player Utley's number, Rollins' number, or Howard's number anytime soon. Like, they've essentially been retired as it is. You know, like, they're not going to give Utley's number away to somebody. You know, if Alec Bohm comes up, he's not getting Utley's number. He's not getting Rollins' number. And he doesn't want their number, but I'm just saying.
I hope he asks.
You know what
for
I mean?
It's I would like him so much. He was like, absolutely, 26. Give me.
I want 26. Give me.
I will be the greatest. Get ready.
I will
exactly.
walk. I will walk.
But that's the thing. I mean, nobody's getting those numbers. Like, Bryce Harper changed his number because he didn't want to take Roy Halladay's number. These numbers are essentially retired already. Make it formal and do it. Have a huge celebration at the ballpark. It will be universally loved by fans. Isn't that reason enough to do it? Like, the fan base would just eat it up, and you'd be able to say, here are these guys who are legends of this organization. No one's going to wear these numbers again. I think it builds up the prestige of the organization when you have a few more numbers retired than the ones they have just now. And you've got to bring this generation of fans along. Most Phillies fans don't remember watching Mike Schmidt and Steve Carlton play baseball. You've got to have some kind of representation from this generation, or even I guess we're talking about maybe even the generation slightly before this generation. You know, you've got to give the current crop of fans something to look at when they're at the ballpark and just add their numbers. Don't be dumb about this, Phillies. Don't be dumb about this.
Another generation of zero Phillies Hall of Famers will go by before we know it, Phillies, and we'll still be looking at Mike Schmidt as the most recent player to have his number retired by the Phillies. So, yeah, you can make this happen. I mean, let's just look at it the way we're saying. There's a big pile of money just sitting there, and you want to be friends with it. So.
I mean, now that they've all had their own individual retirement ceremonies, there's really no need to retire their jerseys individually again. Have a big old party with the three of them.
Yeah.
I think they would go for it. You know, invite everybody back.
Make a weekend out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Make it, you know, they just did those retirement ceremonies last year. Give it a few years. You know, maybe wait until the 15th anniversary of 2008. That would make sense. Everybody would be a little further away from it. It would, you know, it would feel a little bit more ceremonious. But, you know, who needs a reason? You don't ever really need a reason for a party, but it's just so silly. Why are we talking about this? Why are they like this? Why are the Phillies like this?
I don't know. It's the off season where we're also searching for things.
Oh, no. I meant, why are we talking about this? Like, this problem shouldn't exist. They should just retire them.
Feels like there's been some changeover and some modernization of the franchise that has historically lagged behind. But I think every once in a while you still run into these kind of antiquated notions. And that's what I mean by who at the organization really thinks this is an important rule to uphold. Because I just have a hard time envisioning them sitting in a meeting and being like, well, we would, but we can't.
Hands
are tied. We can't check the bylaws. We can't do it.
Check the bylaws.
Like, you guys can do whatever you want. It's your team. It's your stadium. It's like go nuts.
It's like the Phillies are a condo association.
Yeah. That's all right. The rules are you can't have a pink flamingo on your front yard. It's just not something we can do. Yeah, we have an HOA here. They're pretty strict about that.
That pink flamingo is not in Cooperstown.
No. No, I wouldn't want to, you don't want, it's, anyway, let's move on.
We're going out strong in 2019.
I don't know where to go with that. Yeah, we're rusty here on the Old Hit Season podcast. Up next, we're going to get into some Phillies New Year's resolutions as we look ahead to 2020. That's up next here on Hit and Season. And we're back on Hit and Season. So as New Year's approaches, and by the time many of you hear this, it will already be the year 2020. We look ahead now. We did a lot of stuff on the last decade that just passed. There's obviously been a lot of pieces written about the last Phillies decade, which sucked. I mean, Jim Salisbury had a good piece in NBC Sports Philadelphia about the last decade, and my takeaway was it sucked. It was a bad decade. Even the 2 years at the beginning of the decade when they were good were profound disappointments. Then you had the middle part. Then you had 2 or 3 years after that where they still thought maybe they could compete but couldn't. Then you had to say goodbye to all the old stars that were leaving, the guys we were just talking about. And then you had the awful rebuild and the slow rebuild and how long it took a three-year rebuild, 2015, 16, 17, for this team to finally get some momentum. And then you had the disappointments of 2018 and 2019 with an overmatched manager and a lot of free agent signings, but disappointing performances and disappointing endings and collapses in September. It was an awful decade of Phillies baseball, guys.
I wish I knew what to say. Uh-huh.
So we move on the 2020 season and a new decade.
I mean, this is purely subjective, but I mean, it feels like those 90s, early 2000s teams that we're always referencing offhandedly, that feels like that went on forever. And this decade really kind of flew by as far as like looking at it from a Phillies season standpoint. And I mean, the fact that there were two division winners this decade, it made 2012, you know, you kind of felt like, oh, when's this team going to turn it around? And then they just never did. And from that point forward, they sunk lower and lower. And we discussed this on the Dirty Inning as well, that the team's low point in this decade really seemed to happen like right in the middle, kind of like in the middle of 2015 was, you know, that infamous white flag game. And that, to me, was probably the low point. It's not like everything was, you know, turned around after that, but it was like this team really sagged in the middle. And I think we're not crazy for feeling better about them now and better about their chances. But now's the time. You know, narratively, a fresh start, a new year, a new decade, a new era, a new manager. Bryce Harper, we can just forget Bryce Harper's first year, not of his personally, but of the team's, and just kind of like, you know, look ahead. I think that would be just healthy for everybody to just finally be that team again, because we don't have to be Phillies teams that are bad for 20 years between golden eras. We can clean this up in less than 10 years. Remember, this was going to be the fastest rebuild in baseball history.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about that. If we don't, we don't, you know? It's not happening. But anyway, yeah, I mean, this team does have some promise heading into 2020, as well it should, given how much money they have spent and some of the good players they do have on this team. And so, we wanted to do some New Year's resolutions for the team this year. And basically, each of us are going to name one thing that we want the Phillies to resolve to do better in 2020, or a Phillies resolution that we want the team to have here in 2020. And I'll start off, and the one that I can think of that kind of popped into my mind first and foremost was I want them to focus on the individual strengths of the players they have and make them and work with those strengths, not try to force people into doing things that they aren't suited to do. You know, I'm all for trying to get Zach Eflin to maybe try something different, or try and get Scott Kingery to try and do something different for a time. But at a certain point, you have to stop trying to jam square pegs into round holes. And I want to see this team work with the talent that they have, get the most out of it, and do a better job of not weighing everybody down with too much information and just make the game simpler for players. That's my New Year's resolution for 2020, is for this team to make things simpler for the players. And I think they're going to get a lot more out of them in 2020 if they can manage to do that. Liz, what is one of your New Year's resolutions for the Phillies?
One of my New Year's resolutions is I would like their starters to last longer in games. I would like for them to resolve to pitch more, because we've seen so many over the past few years, really short starts, lots and lots and lots of bullpen use, all of it frustrating as we all scream into pillows. It would be cool if they could do less of that. They don't even have to do it that much. Like, just an extra half inning. Some of that might have been Gabe Kapler pulling pitchers at weird times because he was known to do that. So maybe we'll see some of that improve naturally under Joe Girardi. But I don't see how that's not like a main goal of you know, the rotation this year, besides be better, pitch better in general.
Yeah, that's a great one. And you know, with the bullpen that they have, they're going to need their starters to go deeper into games.
So excited, everybody.
Woo-wee. Justin, what is a New Year's resolution you have for the Phillies?
Well, I know we didn't learn a lot of specific information about the Matt Klentak-Gabe Kapler relationship when he was here, but we did kind of know that Gabe Kapler was an extension of the front office, and that what they kind of deemed fit, that's what he wanted to do. And that resulted in a lot of confusion, I think. And like you said, John, making things easier for the players should be a priority, because you're going to get better performances out of guys who understand what the hell's going on. So in that vein, and I do think we will see a difference in this team moving forward with the influence of Joe Girardi in the clubhouse. And while I'm very curious about what the relationship between Matt Klentak and Joe Girardi is going to be, especially given our suspicions about how he was hired and who Matt Klentak would have rather hired. But, you know, that's all in the past. Girardi's here. And I don't know. I'd have to go with, you know, trust Joe Girardi to be the baseball manager you hired him to be. You know, there's a reason that he was brought in. And even if it wasn't the GM who wanted him more than anyone to be here, I think there's a reason Joe Girardi specifically was brought in. And that was to be a leader, was to be experienced, to know how to talk to guys, to use what he did in other places and had success in doing other places to make the Phillies into the kind of team they should be by now. So I'd like to see them trust their manager to be, you know, the manager of the team, and hopefully see some improvements in that regard, because I think they're going to wind up putting a lot of emphasis on culture changes because they didn't put a lot of emphasis on you know, big blockbuster personnel changes. In fact, you could argue that Joe Girardi was their highest profile acquisition of the offseason. So if that's going to be your move, then let that be your move, and don't try to insert a bunch of thought processes into the dugout from the front office during the game. I feel like you just got to let trust Joe Girardi. He's here for a reason. I would also like to say that they can resolve to have no more Andy McPhail press conferences. I think
that's a good one.
I think that would be healthy for everyone. The last thing anybody wants to hear after, you know, a frustrating chunk of games or a frustrating season.
Forever.
Is Andy McPhail's bulleted list of what he thinks is going on, which usually isn't. So I think we can do without that as far as PR goes moving forward as well.
I love that one, Justin. Absolutely right. And if I'm thinking organizationally, I want the team to get better developing young players. That's something this team desperately needs. You look at the Nationals, and they have guys like Soto and Trey Turner, and guys that they traded for Trey Turner, but they developed him in the minor leagues. Robles is going to be a good young player for them. They've got some. The Braves have their young talent, obviously, with Albies and Acuna and Freddie Freeman, guys that they drafted and developed. And Soroka, the starting pitcher, Max Fried is going to be a good young starting pitcher for them. And they have the number one farm system in baseball, according to most folks. So they have more on the way that they can either promote or use in trades to make themselves better. Even the Mets seem to have a lot of good young talent. Pete Alonso, Ahmed Rosario is a good young player. Brandon Nimmo is a good player. Conforto was a guy that they drafted and developed. I mean, they have guys too. So the Phillies don't have that. I mean, with Kingery and Hoskins, I think if there are any breakout candidates for the Phillies this year, it's Kingery and Hoskins, I think, are the two most likely guys, because really they're the two only guys. They're the two only young guys on the team that has somewhere to go upward as far as, you know, homegrown youthful guys that you could envision getting a little bit more out of. But
Haseley, anyone?
Yeah, I like Adam Haseley. I just don't know the ceiling is high enough for breakout. But yes, that would be. I mean, he's a first round draft pick. You need some of these first round draft picks to actually hit.
To act like first round draft picks should.
Yes, yes. And I think most people look at Adam Haseley and realize, well, they got him in the first round, but he's not a first round talent necessarily. But maybe he'll be that. Maybe he'll be a 3-win player or 4-win player, and then the offense will be better than we think. Maybe Alec Bohm comes up at some point here midseason and hits really well, and he becomes a cornerstone member of this team. They need Spencer Howard to do well. Basically, they have a couple of guys that they're pinning their hopes on. In Alec Bohm and Spencer Howard, and the rest of their guys are all kind of, there's a lot of depth in the organization, but there's not a lot of star potential. There's not a lot of star power. They've got to get better at getting impact players through the international market and from the draft. And I don't know whether it's bad player selection or whether they haven't been able to turn these guys into something really encouraging, with the exception of Bohm and Spencer Howard at this point. So that's my main thing. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't know how they go about doing that. I'm sure that it's a question that they and every other organization is trying to figure out. But they have got to get better at developing young players.
Yeah, I that's a great one, John. That's something this team's been missing for forever. And the nice thing about a resolution is we can say, oh, I hope they learn how to do this. But I don't really know, you know, how. I can't really put together a multi-point plan for this team to suddenly become good at developing young players. But, hey, maybe Alec Bohm will be the start of a new generation of young Phillies players who are the product of a productive system. So, yeah, I think not only should they, I think they kind of have to. Like, this is going to be their move, getting third base ready for their third baseman of the future. You know, they just watched a previous third baseman of the future sign a one-year deal with the Royals. So, all the evidence is there of how this goes when it goes wrong. I think it's about time it goes right for once.
All right, folks. Well, listen, those are some resolutions for the 2020 season. And obviously, I think most of those are doable, with the exception of maybe developing players. That's going to take a while. I mean, that's just not a quick fix here, 2020. But they got to get started on it here. But before we wrap up episode number 347, Liz, any final thoughts from you before we say adios?
Well, thinking about that long list of things that the Phillies really need to do better, I couldn't help but think of this. At the very least, we are all expecting to enjoy watching Phillies baseball. It doesn't always have to be great. It doesn't always have to be completely fun. But the point of watching baseball is to enjoy it. And all the things that you said feed into that, because we want them to win. But at the least, I want to enjoy it. I want to end the season not thinking, well, my God, why did I just watch that? Which, To be honest, at the end of this season, I kind of felt like that. Like, why did I watch all of this? You know, I love Bryce Harper, but it was so frustrating on so many levels. And I think, you know, that's not an unreasonable expectation. We all just, you know, we can criticize and we can be angry at what they do. But at the very least, they have to deliver us enjoyable, watchable, competent baseball, which they had trouble doing a lot last year. So the lowest of expectations, enjoyable baseball in 2020.
I mean, we deserve it. As I think about that last decade,
my God,
we deserve it. We were promised it, and I really hope that's what we get here in 2020 as well. It'll make doing this podcast a lot more fun as well. Justin, final thoughts from you before we wrap up.
So around 5th and Girard in Philadelphia, the everybody hits batting cages has been shut down. The building,
I heard about this.
The building that they were in was sold, and they are no more. They're currently selling the batting cages, all the equipment from their business, and they would love if somebody who wanted to start a new one somewhere would buy them and, you know, go forward on that endeavor, and they'd be happy to advise them on that. I used to play softball right around there. I used to live right around the corner. I would walk down there and take a few cuts before a game, just to get back in, you know, hitting shape for the season. Take a couple of slow pitch softball tosses
Did you face the curveball machine?
Absolutely not. I could only bat in the middle or left hand side cages because I'm left handed. I couldn't go on the right hand side. And there's not a lot to say here other than it was a great spot for the community in not one of the most developed sections of Philadelphia. It was an awesome thing for the neighborhood to have. It was a music venue for a lot of great bands. I know a guy who used to DJ there. It was just a cool component to living in the city and living in Philadelphia, and it just sucks that it's gone. So if anybody really wants to take on the mantle of Everybody Hits, please do so, because it's something this community is really going to miss.
Yeah, that sucks. I read about that this week, and it's always a bummer when something fun in the community goes away for really no good reason at all. I mean, it's just it's not a lack of interest. It's, you know, something that's out of anybody's control and just sucks. So, get in touch with those guys if you want to pick up the mantle and become Everybody Hits Part 2. Anyway, that'll do it for episode 347 of Hittin' Season. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Liz, for joining me on the podcast once again. And folks, a reminder, please, to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. Leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. Helps the podcast grow tremendously if you would do that. And make sure to check out our Hittin' Season Patreon. We got lots of bonus content up there for you as well. Go to patreon.com/hittinseason to check all that stuff out. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.